It's a tough time to be a Hamiltonian. The city's having a hard time. Maybe it really isn't a new thing for this gritty city that we love. We've had tough times before. But it's been a particularly rough summer, and the events of this past week have been truly heartbreaking. The hate crimes perpetrated on our neighbors at Beth Jacob Synagogue were deeply troubling. After a summer where we all have been reminded of the reality of organized hatred in our city, the weekly events at our city hall's forecourt, the counter-protests, the violence, perhaps we're not surprised at what occurred. We all took note when Statistics Canada published the fact that Hamilton had more hate crimes than any other Canadian city last year. What happened at Beth Jacob was that anti-Semitic and threatening messages of hate were scrawled around the synagogue as the faithful prepared to come for their Sabbath celebrations. The police have made arrests and laid charges, and our neighborhood responded with love and support. Still, it was a bad day for our city and our neighbors. The week didn't improve. We were all horrified later in the week by the news of the death of 14-year-old Devin Brackey Salvi, stabbed outside Sir Winston Churchill Secondary School in front of his mother. Devin had been bullied all this school year and had called on his mother the day of his death so he could be picked up and taken to safety. Two teenagers had been charged with Devin's homicide. Devin wasn't the first teenager to be killed by other teens in our city this year. In April, 17-year-old Abdallah Hassan was shot in the back of the head inside his family's car. Three teenage boys, two 16-year-olds and a 15-year-old, are charged with first-degree murder. The complete and utter disregard for the value of human life is deeply troubling, and the devastation brought on families is terribly distressing. What are we to do? Some people might feel it's time to move on, get out of here, and that would be understandable. In today's first reading, we find the people of Israel in exile in a foreign land called Babylon. They felt unhappy, discouraged, and restless, so they were constantly fantasizing about returning to Israel. If only we could go home again, they thought. Then they would be happy. If only we could leave Babylon and return to Israel, then life would be good. It was in this context that God sent them some advice through a letter written by the prophet Jeremiah. God's message to these restless exiles is clear. God said to the people, quit fantasizing about returning to Israel. Instead, make the best of what you have. Put down roots, build homes, plant crops, have children and grandchildren. Enjoy life in Babylon and seek its welfare. It's interesting advice. The people of Israel want to go somewhere else, but God says to live fully where they are. In short, God is inviting the people to partner with God in redeeming the circumstances they find themselves in. In order to take this advice and learn practices of faithfulness, neighborliness, and citizenship that are recommended here, I think we would need to check our own tendencies. We tend to worry more about our own personal contentment than almost anything else. We want the perfect job, a perfect spouse, belong to a perfect church, live in the perfect house, attend the perfect school. We tend to think that geographical location has got something to do with this. The fact, however, that external circumstances such as geographical location play a very small role in our overall contentment. The good life that God promises isn't about having everything perfect. In fact, these perfect things don't exist. They never have, and they never will. In one way or another, we're always living in Babylon. External circumstances are never perfect. Therefore, one of the secrets of the good life that God intends for us is learning to make the best out of the circumstances we have, learning how to respond in redemptive and loving ways to the brokenness we live in. And so we would do well to listen to God's advice to these restless exiles in Babylon. Perhaps a few of us do need to make a change, get a new job, move to a new city. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but very few of us need to make those kinds of changes in order to be happy. Most of us need to follow God's advice and learn to flourish in Babylon. God's chosen people were carried off into captivity in the city of Babylon, and this, of course, was a very troubling situation for them, torn from their home, no temple in which to worship the Lord, no godly rulers, no laws based on revealed guidance about how to live. But then the Lord gave the prophet Jeremiah some new instructions for these captive Israelites. He told them God wanted them to build houses for their families to live in and to plant crops for their livelihood. He instructed them to multiply there, marrying and producing children, and God gave them this assignment for their lives as citizens. Seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile, and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for in its welfare you will find your welfare. And the Hebrew word for welfare here is shalom, which is often translated as peace, but it's also including the notions of justice and righteousness. Similar advice is given to the New Testament church. The Apostle Peter addresses believers who, like the ancient Israelites in Babylon, are aliens and exiles in the places where they live. And he gives them a similar assignment. Quote, conduct yourselves honorably among the Gentiles so that though they malign you as evildoers, they may see your honorable deeds and glorify God when he comes to judge. 1 Peter chapter 2. The mandate should be clear. We're to have care about the welfare of our human beings, and we must act honorably in their midst. The Mennonites have a wonderful phrase to describe our present situation as Christians. We're living in the time of God's patience, they say. If God is patient, we must be also. We need to patiently engage the issues in our common life and in our city and nation with a willingness to find less than perfect solutions. We should vote in the upcoming election despite the fact there may not seem to be any perfect choices. We should, in the light of the tragic deaths of our young people, take stock. As my friend Rabbi Hillel Lavery Israeli said this week, all Hamiltonians should feel responsible at least to some degree. The existence of meaningless hate that could lead to violence and murder is a stain on us all. Bullying is a plague which must be eradicated immediately. And so parents everywhere, you must speak to your children in no uncertain terms and impress upon them that there can never be justification for raising a hand to harm another person. Schools must make education for love, acceptance, tolerance, and coexistence a priority. Elected officials and police services must do everything humanly possible to immediately solve these problems once and for all. We all bitterly mourn Devin's senseless death, and we pray that this will awaken everyone into action to ensure a tragedy like this could never recur. I haven't yet mentioned the fact that today is Harvest Thanksgiving Sunday. Today's gospel reading picks up on the theme of Thanksgiving, where Jesus, on his way to Jerusalem and traveling through Samaritan country, stops to heal 10 lepers. And one of these returns to Jesus with thanks. To the one who returns, Jesus says, "Your faith has healed you," which is an interesting thing for him to say. What was he referring to? He and the other 9 lepers had already been healed. Even those who didn't return with thanksgiving had been healed. As often happens in the Gospels, it seems Jesus is marveling here at the faith of this outsider who teaches us what it means to be with Jesus, what it means to be saved. Salvation also means healing in the New Testament. Not only is this person healed, but he follows in faith. He returns to Jesus to give thanks, and in a way, this might be taken as a sort of picture of what Christian discipleship looks like. It returns to Jesus again and again in gratitude, so that all that we do in word and deed is an expression of gratitude to Jesus. The Samaritan leper reminds us that salvation is not merely a matter of a one-time encounter with Jesus. It's not merely a moment of time, but it's also a matter of following. To be given gifts by Jesus is one thing. To respond to Jesus' gifts in gratitude by following Jesus is that movement that completes the work that we call salvation in Jesus Christ. God's love desires not just our assent, but our reception, our participation. And that participation, that life of love and thanksgiving, is lived out in a particular context. It's lived out in the place where we live. May we all know, and may our city and neighborhood know, the love that God has for us, the shalom, the peace, justice, and righteousness that God desires for all people.